All right, welcome to the Interstate of Music podcast. And today my guest is Chad Stewart. He is a key accounts manager for DW Drums. And I just want to welcome you to the podcast, Chad. How are you, man?
Very good. Thanks. Happy to be here.
So Chad, I don't want to jump right into DW Drums. I want to jump into Chad Stewart a little bit here. I want to go all the way back into just getting to know you as far as what your passion and love of drums, percussion. When did that all start? I mean, you work at a drum percussion manufacturer, but is that always what you kind of saw yourself doing and being?
Strangely enough, yes, to a large degree. I begin playing drums early. Not necessarily a unique story, but I'm the pots and pans in the kitchen kid. Got my first actual drum set somewhere in early elementary school, from a garage sale. Joined the school band the minute they would let me. Where I lived, I believe that was sixth grade. And very much always saw myself from probably about middle school on some sort of dual purpose in either playing or part of manufacturing drums. I'm a tinkerer by nature. I always liked to take things apart and see how they work. So working for a manufacturer made perfect sense. But yeah, as early as I can remember, something surrounding percussion was a vocational aspiration. And I honestly never had a backup plan. I went to college, majored in music, and basically told my parents that I was okay living in a cardboard box if I couldn't figure out how to make a living with drums.
That's amazing. So, I mean, were you back when it came to the school band thing? I remember when I was in, I think it was like fourth or fifth grade, and, you go to this like night of where they show all the different instruments and you bring your parents because you want to take music and all this stuff. And they have all these instruments and you'd go and say, yeah, I really think I want to play this one. Was that kind of like, and I remember for the drums, it was a snare drum and that was it. It was like, you're going to learn on the snare drum. And I picked saxophone and I played that for as long as I felt like carrying that heavy ass saxophone case to and from the whole lesson side of things. I'm like, this is a pain in the ass. It was winter. It was a long walk in the parking lot to get where the music studio was. And I think I legitimately quit playing the saxophone for two reasons. One, reading music is about as hard as it gets. It did not click in my head. And the size of a saxophone case and lugging that across a long parking lot in the snow was just not Jeff Peterson. And so I to this day, I go back and I'm like, man, I should have just grabbed that snare drum. And it seems a lot more fun, to play, drums than maybe the saxophone. It just seems like there's a lot more to it as far as like the music I listen to and all that kind of stuff. So I always look back on it, but then I start to realize drummers lug the most shit out of anybody in a band. So I'm like, man, that was a big lie when they just showed that little snare drum. Hey, you want to play the drums? It's like, oh, it's like, that's kind of a teaser. So was that kind of your experience, or did you buy a full freaking drum set at the garage sale and start banging on it?
So yeah, at the garage sale, I bought a, a blue Sparkle Ludwig Club Date 4-piece drum set. But my school band experience was very much the snare drum in the black molded plastic case.
Right.
I have vivid memories of the bus stop and trying to lug that on the bus. And, no offense, but you get no sympathy on your saxophone story.
Yeah, right. Back then, I didn't realize how lazy I truly was when it came to carrying anything.
Yeah, I go to gigs now, and I always make the comment, crap, I should have played the piccolo.
Right. Yeah, but to be honest with you, I don't know how much play you get coming out and saying, yeah, hey, I'm a professional piccolo player. I don't know if that plays. It's like, it's really, really seems hard to play it, though. It's really little.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was always certainly a cool factor for the drums.
Yeah.
However, the reality is that most drummers are actually nerds at heart. I mean, I think I'd been married for about 3 or 4 years, and my wife finally said, "Oh my God, you're a dork." And I was like, "Oh, she caught on. Wow."
That's so fantastic. So yeah. when you started kind of realizing that you could like kind of tap your head and rub your belly at the same time and hold a beat with separate hands, and that just way of just physically and mentally being able to, you know, learn that style instrument, because it is that's a thing, that's a skill that not everybody just simply doesn't have. Once you started kind of honing in on that, what did you gravitate to as far as, you know, the type of music that you wanted to go home and practice playing? And did you read the music, or was it you were more inclined to listen to a song that you loved and try to play the drums to it? Like, how did you really hone in your skills?
So I very much learned to read music through the school music programs, but also at the same time really gravitated towards just putting on, at the time, cassette tapes.
Oh, good for you.
Or, you know, even earlier than that, 45s, and playing along. And, you know, for whatever reason, I gravitated towards a little bit of a singer-songwriter type music, more classic rock, folky kind of stuff early. I didn't necessarily listen like to the
specifically,
same music.
Who specifically, like, would fall into that for you?
God, I can't believe I'm going to admit this on something that's being recorded.
Hey, my favorite song is Jesse's Girl by Rick Springfield. So let the world know that. You know, that judge me.
I had an uncle who was a drummer, and he was the coolest man on the planet as far as I was concerned. And somewhere in the mid-1970s, he turned me on to a guy named Dan Fogelberg.
Oh my gosh, for sure.
Yeah, and I literally, he kind of taught me my first really simple rock beat, and I began to apply that to a Dan Fogelberg cassette. And then as time went on, I progressed into the same 80s rock everyone else did. I began to experience some jazz stuff as I, you know, hung out with more musician-y musicians. But to be honest, I grew up, my mom had a big record collection with Beatles and the Lovin' Spoonful and stuff like that. So that sort of songwriter based material was ingrained in me early.
So if you had five different people like call you up and say, "Hey, we need a drummer, we need to play tonight," and you could pick out of those five, and they're all random genres of music, but like right now, today, you woke up, you kind of got into your day, you're feeling this right now, who are you saying yes to? What style of music that you want to go and gig tonight?
So I would do something that falls in that jazz-influenced rock category, for lack of a better analogy, a Steely Dan-ish type music. Something that has a hook, it's popular, you'd hear it on the radio, but still has some heightened musicianship influences.
So the artistry that you can kind of go in a few different directions, put your own twist on it?
Yeah.
Love that. Love that. And are you doing much personal playing out there now?
Yeah. So I play as much as I can. The pandemic put a bit of a damper on that. Yeah, I had about 25 dates on the books in March when things shut down, and they all went away in the course of a week. But I tend to, during normal times, I play between 3 and 5 times a month with an original band who, you know, I tend to call solid minor leaguers.
That's awesome.
You know, and nobody does it full time.
So when you talk about original, are you coming up with some of your own stuff and bringing it to people, or are you taking what they're bringing to you and adding that drum, you know, percussion to it?
Right. So that particular project, the lead guy who's been doing it for a number of years is a very talented songwriter and wordsmith And he tends to come to the rest of the band with a, you know, an idea that's typically an acoustic guitar and the lyrics in a moderately organized form. And then we sort of listen to that go away, develop our own parts and come back together and craft that. So a little more traditional songwriting versus how it's done in modern studios today.
So has playing the drums gotten you to play other instruments along the way? Have you picked up guitar, maybe the cello? Probably not cello.
Oddly enough, I played the cello for 2 years because they started orchestra before they would start band. And I just wanted to be involved in music so bad, I did 2 years of cello.
I promise I had no idea about that. I saw cello in your eyes.
yeah. Well, to be honest, it's a fascinating instrument that I have, you know, a fifth grade aptitude on.
That's more than mine.
Yeah, I don't claim to play any other instruments. You know, I took a lot of music theory in college. I played a lot of marimba in college. But I tend to tell people that I was never in danger of anyone asking me to play the marimba. So, you know, I'm proficient enough to bang through a few chords on the piano, same thing on guitar. But I'm the kind of guitar player that still looks at his left hand.
Sure.
So for practical purposes, no.
Right. And so as you kind of went through, you know, your educational side of things, and when did you start to actually make music how you paid your bills other than being in a band? So working for a music manufacturer, a percussion manufacturer, like what was your journey? Have you worked for DW from day one? What was your kind of get to it?
Okay, so I went to work for the local music store in high school.
Okay.
Because my parents suggested that if I was going to have a gear appetite, that I might leverage the discount that came with working there on Saturdays.
Best advice ever.
Right. After college, and after some playing full time for a while, I went to work at another music store. And I just kind of progressed through the music retail thing. Being honest, my end goal was from the time I first discovered DW, my end goal was to work there. And it took me the better part of 20 years. The fact is that no one ever leaves DW voluntarily. It's a really nice organization and people stay forever and kind of work through the ranks. And I had to wait for an opportunity. So I worked for two other drum companies prior to DW, gaining the appropriate experience and honestly just waiting out the process.
Right. Yeah. And you hear that common journey in the music industry is so many people work for, like, if somebody works for Fender now, they work for Gibson. They work for other guitar manufacturers along the way. And you all seem to cross paths on the regular. So it's really, but you know what? It never seems that it is in a negative way. It always seems like positive experiences, but everybody kind of has a place they personally want to get to. And I love that your goal was, no matter who you're working for, your goal was like, I like DW. I like what they're putting out as a product that fits for me personally. And that you kind of just knew you had to kind of put yourself in that spot, but until it's open, it's not open.
Yeah. And it really, you know, I badgered them on a semi-frequent basis.
Sure.
You know, but it really was just waiting out the opportunity. And I loved the two jobs I had previous. I gained unbelievable knowledge, worked with some wonderful people. And right. You're right. It's a small little incestuous industry. We all kind of bounce back and forth. But I was, the day I flew out to DW for an interview was a bit of a moment of arrival for me.
That's amazing. And where are you actually living? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Roswell, New Mexico. Insert your alien jokes immediately.
That's the one category of joke I don't know if I have is the alien joke category, because I've never known anybody to be from Roswell. But cool.
Well, I'd like to say I lived there 18 years and a few days, which is relatively accurate. I couldn't wait to get out. It was a small town.
Sure.
And then I went to college in Texas, and with the exception of a 3-year stint in Northern California, I've lived in Texas ever since.
So whereabouts in Texas? I was born in Houston and lived there for 3.5 years, just long enough to kind of get a little accent going, and then moved to the northern suburbs of Chicago, and then I grabbed that one.
Yeah. So I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth suburbs. I live, you know, 12 miles due north of the airport.
Sure.
So it's kind of anywhere USA because you're in the suburbs.
Absolutely.
But it's the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex.
That's awesome. And school-wise, did you go to school to college focused on music, or was it, I don't know what I'm going to school for, I want to, you know, just generalize my path because I don't know what's next? What was your kind of focus when you went in?
I did. I went in majoring in music. I was fortunate enough to gain a scholarship. And I originally started as a music education person, which is basically how you become a band director. And I quickly realized that was a complete disservice to society. And that I likely would end up incarcerated.
So, that's fantastic. That is awesome. So
I switched to music performance.
That's very, very cool. That's so fun. Did you kind of get a lot of who you are today through those college years of looking at music, or did it pretty much come after? Was your experience more working for those other drum manufacturers before you got to DW? Or did college kind of start to make you who you were?
I think college absolutely played a vital role in that. It honed my aptitude for music. It honed my enjoyment of music. And it gave me sort of the structural background that I use today in this job. I think regardless of the degree program, just the experience of deadlines and focusing on goals, that's stuff I use every single day.
Right, no doubt. And so when it comes to DW, you get the job, this is your dream job, this was your goal. Who knows where you're going to end up in DW through the years and the different roles that might pop up. But DW as a company, you had your thoughts of why you wanted to go to DW as far as a drum manufacturer. What were those thoughts? Like, what did you look at DW as a drum manufacturer that made you say, that's where I want to be?
Right.
From the outside looking in before you got in.
Yeah. Because I think it's fair to say that, you know, once you're on the other side of the glass, the perspective is always different.
Right.
What attracted me to the company was a couple of things. One, the innovation. They just, I think it's fair to say that in the last 50 years, DW has by and large led the field in acoustic drum innovation. And that was really attractive to me. They quite frankly just did things different.
Sure.
And I equated that different to better. The other thing that very much attracted me to DW is, I think there's a perspective that DW is this really big corporate giant, and it's not.
It's not.
Yeah. What DW is a moderately large family business.
Yeah.
The patriarch or two patriarchs of the company, are still there every day. And, Our CEO, Chris Lombardi, who is, you know, Don Lombardi, the founder's son, is there every day. And his son, Connor, Generation 3 is there every day. It is a family business through and through. We have multiple generations of families working inside DW in a number of different roles. And I just really, I think that's the small town kid in me coming out.
Sure,
I really liked that family feel. I like the fact that if I have a problem, I can call Chris Lombardi's cell phone and he's going to answer it.
That's cool. That's more important to people that once they start to realize they're in that situation. A lot of people think they want that big corporate job and then they get into it. And like you said, on the flip side, you're like, oh, I want to go work for this brand or that brand or this company outside the music industry, this big corporation. And then they get in there and like, holy cow, you know, that whole I'm just a number thing. That's kind of true sometimes. And I always love hearing it's so common in the music industry with music manufacturers, having them have this outward appearance of being just mammoth because of the popularity and the industry itself, and seeing it on a massive stage being played by this drummer and being like, oh my gosh, that company, this, that, and that imaging. But then when you break it down behind the scenes, it really is a whole bunch of people that really care and love, you know, the job, the company, the manufacturing, and being there doesn't mean it's got to be this massive corporation to make those ends meet. It's a lot of work. There's a lot of things to it. There's a lot of pieces to that puzzle. But in the end, it feels like in the music industry in totality, you can fit everybody at a conference room table that is making some of those decisions. And there's not this crazy hierarchy of the demographic and some of the things that other, you know, corporations are going through to get something to market.
Yeah, and to maybe give that a little perspective, during non-COVID times, we give factory tours, and I always like to tag along on those because they're just a blast.
Yeah.
And I was doing that several years ago, and one of the guys on the tour, we get to the portion of the tour where we've got a guy whose job is to lay up the plies of the shells and put them in the shell mold. And the guy very innocently asked, he said, you know, how long have you worked here? And he said, you know, 25 years. And he said, well, in that 25 years, how many of these shells do you think you've made? And our guy said, all of them. That's what he does. Right. And to me, as cliche as that is, that really that's our company. We have a guy who puts the reinforcement rings in, and he's the guy. And if he's out that day, we don't put reinforcement rings in.
Right. I love that. I love that because that's also something that, as you know, if you're a drummer out there and you're looking at your product and care, knowing the consistency and the personal care of something not going on a, you know, this huge line of bang, 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 and just you're doing this little part, that there's this handmade aspect to your drums and your products. That's really cool. I mean, I personally wouldn't have thought that, because I have not gotten a chance yet to go on that tour. And honestly, when I get to that part in that tour, when I get a chance, I'm going to ask that same exact question, not because I don't already know the answer, because I want to hear the guy that does it. I want him to give me that answer, because that's just cool.
Yeah. See, I think that kind of stuff is, it makes us different. It doesn't, listen, I'm fond of saying, if you spend $5,000 on a set of drums, I bet you got a good set, right?
Right. Sure. Like, sure.
I'm not under the pretense that we're the only game in town, but we absolutely do things different. And to a large part, I feel like our difference is better.
Yeah. No, that is so cool. So tell me a little bit, how involved are you? And this is actually a question off the cuff. I have no idea. How involved are you, or does everybody at your company get involved with some of the artists that are using your drum sets, you know, on tour and everything? Is that something you're involved in, or is that something that you're just kind of made aware of so that, you know, you can use it when you talk about it? What does that feel like within the company? Because I know it's different at every company.
Yeah. So, I mean, we definitely try to separate the job titles.
Totally.
You know, I am by definition in sales.
Right.
So I am not arranging backline gear for artists.
Right.
However, you know, I've been in the industry a long time. A lot of those artists are my friends.
That's yeah.
You know, some of them I went to college with, some of them I've just gotten to know over time. And we certainly don't put up barriers between us and the artists. I respect our marketing and our artist department, and I try not to step on their toes. You know, am I involved with artists on a day-to-day basis? No, but you know, it's always amazing to me to go out to Oxnard, walk in the front door, and who you encounter at our facility on any given day. Right. As a music fan, it's never short of a pinch me moment.
Right. That is, I love that. And because I asked that question because that it's so commonly asked to us, you know, of like, who are the artists that are engaged with this product line? Who are the artists for, because everybody's looking for that marketing aspect of it. But then also that, I guess it's a little bit of like, if so-and-so is playing it, it must be good. I really love this drummer and I love that sound. I love this album that was put out and this was the drum kit that was used on that. And it really does play through when you're really that level of music, you're listening to all the aspects of that music. And if you want that sound, that's the sound. It's coming because of that instrument and et cetera. So we get asked it in a lot of ways. And I always wanted to know the difference in how different manufacturers kind of played in that world.
Yeah, I will tell you this. We are, from an innovation standpoint, we are by far the most artist-driven company I've worked with. And what I mean by that is, you know, I take our hardware as an example. Our hardware is very, very artist-centric. You know, you can look at a cymbal stand and say, well, it's a series of chrome tubes that hold up a big round plate.
Right, totally.
Right? The difference is, if I'm sitting behind a drum set and I need to adjust something on a cymbal stand, with zero regard for thought, it's intuitive. It's artist intuitive from the artist's perspective. I don't have to stand up and walk around the drum set to move a tilter. Everything is done from that perspective, and that it's done by design that way because it's artist driven. The lion's share of our really cool products came as suggestions from artists who were touring or in the studio and said, you know what, if.
Right. That's, I love that side of it because it's, you know, when, because you sit there and we have our own sound guy here, that goes around and he'll mic the drum kits up and everything, but he's also a drummer. So you can see him sitting down and kind of getting a feel for the house kit on how that's going to play for the next drummer that's coming in because of that kind of feel that he has, for what a drummer is going to want to feel like behind that kit and have everything mic'd a certain way, et cetera. And I love the fact that that is part of that thought process. So many people put products out, and I'm talking outside the music industry, where they just, within that conference room, they think it's cool, they think it's needed, they think this is the way it should be. All of a sudden a product hits the market and they realize, oh, I think maybe we're the only people that thought that. And it's a little late at that point. And there's so much that goes into it. So taking the blinders off and kind of being more open-minded and understanding that we make this for drummers. Why don't we listen to the drummers outside of just the company too? You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And even to take that a step further, we're in a unique position where our design engineers, our mechanical engineers play drums.
Right.
And that's not common. It's hard to find.
Sure.
They're a little bit of a unicorn. But it makes a tremendous difference versus just a mechanical engineer trying to meet a goal of kind of written bullet points versus a guy that, you know, he can take it home and see if it works on his gig.
Right. No, I love that. So we bring up the word design has been popping up in this podcast quite a bit. Tell me a little bit about what's coming down the road for DW, what's launching, like some of the design series things. What the different levels of drums that you guys are involved with, you know, from, you know, kind of maybe where a beginner would be all the way to like that design series of, and tell me a little bit about what that's looking like and what it feels like.
Yeah. So I won't be able to tell you everything new that's coming, but we're always working on stuff for sure.
Sometimes you work that angle. I thought maybe you'd forget you're on a podcast. It's just you and me, Chad. We're just talking.
You know, going back to sort of who we are as a company, we do things different. DW is at its core a custom drum company. And, you know, when I say custom, I think that has a lot of definitions. Basically, if you can think of it, we will do it. The exception to that is when John Good says that won't work.
Right, right.
He always has final say to say, no, that doesn't work. So our flagship line is the Collector's Series. It is in anything goes, any finish goes, any size goes within, you know, our physical capabilities.
Yep.
And it's pretty vast. And, you know, to be honest, at times it's incredibly overwhelming.
Yep.
One of the things that I'm very proud that we do, myself as a sales guy and the other salespeople on our staff, we spend a lot of time working directly with end users. Now, we don't sell direct to the public, but there are many times when a guy is designing his dream kit.
Yep.
And he gets to a level of detail that is just beyond where the retail guy feels comfortable helping him.
Absolutely.
We will jump in and foster him through that process, because our goal is always, if you want to build your dream drum set, let's get it right the very first time.
Absolutely.
So that, you know, Collector Series is very much that, the anything goes unless John says it doesn't go.
Yep.
The next level of that is Performance Series, which I'd like to refer to as the original DW. There's no quality difference between Performance Series and Collector Series, but we've limited the number of configurations and shell configurations and finishes just to give you a little more reasonable slice of the pie. If you want, you know, gloss black, you ought to get finish fly. There's not a tremendous advantage of getting that finish in Collector Series unless you wanted, you know, odd sizes, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So it's a little more manageable slice of the pie.
It's kind of, I liken it to walking in to one of those big box stores and seeing all the different color paint chips and just kind of getting overwhelmed, and that collectors could for some be like, I don't know. I want a black one. I want a black kit. It's like, I'm good with it. It's just, I want it to be really good. So it's kind of that side of things. The person that really wants to see all the options and really get the detail of it because they care, because it is their dream kit, versus somebody that's just like, yeah, I want a red kit. I want a this kit, that kind of thing. Oh, I want a natural, whatever. And it's a little bit more, selection simple. Is that fair to say as far as, you know?
Yeah, all we really did is identify the most popular colors and configurations and make it a little more user-friendly.
Yeah,
just removed some of the really picky options.
Yeah, totally. And then, and where does it go? Where does it go from there?
From there, it goes to the Design Series, which is the right up the middle, most logical slice of the pie. It's a single shell configuration, our most popular shell configuration. And it's a limited number of sizes and configurations. It's what I call a player's kit. And we leverage some labor rates, and we make that in our offshore facility. Most people don't hear a difference. The real difference is that you've got 8 colors and a handful of configurations to choose from with a limited number of add-ons. And it's the kit that I tell guys, look, if you're a local guy playing on the weekends and you want a professional kit, this is the one you get that you take out to clubs.
Yep. Totally makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Conversely, things like collectors are very hard to sell in certain formats because of the sheer amount of options. The design series is, you know, more of a boxed kit inventory and much easier to just go, yes, that's what I want, and grab it. And
definitely more retail friendly.
Absolutely. You know,
so you're going to be able to hit the masses, to be part of the decision for a lot of drummers that are out there. And you've got to be that, and have that selection. I love where you guys have gone with things. Before we call it quits on this podcast, what are you playing when you're with, like, what do you have at your, like, how many drum kits do you have? Do you have one that's set up at your house? And then do you have one that you're okay, that gets a little scratched up going to certain gigs? Like, what's Chad playing?
So I have, and it's controversial at times.
How many storage units do you have, Chad?
I had a purge a few years ago, so I'm down to only 3 drum sets. But
I mean, like every normal drummer.
Right. My primary kit is a 1997 collector's kit, and I hear from time to time, why don't you play a newer kit? And the fact is my 1997 collector's kit is special to me.
Yeah.
It was my first professional kit. I was fortunate in John Goodhand selected the shells. It's had 20 years of seasoning of the wood.
Sure.
And it is really, it's my main kit. I take it on the road. I take really good care of it. Most people don't realize it's that old, but it's literally been all around the world. I make sure it's in good cases and cared for, and I don't let other people mess with it. But that's my primary kit. I love it. I could call as immediately after this podcast and source a newer version.
Sure.
But I don't want to.
I love that. And my last question, just to play off of that, because you've clearly been playing it for quite a while. When you're setting up your kit for a gig, no matter where it is in the world, wherever you played, is there a specific thought that you have when you're setting your kit up of a specific gig that just kind of circles through your head more than others of, oh my gosh, I remember that one place that I played when I was setting up this kit in the same configuration or the same way or whatever. This reminds me of that. Like, what is that one place that kind of circles through your head most when you're setting up that kit for a gig?
Wow. That's an interesting one, because there could be a million answers. There is a gazebo in the town square where 5 streets come together in Belfast, Ireland. And at a very young age, I was fortunate enough to sit on that gazebo and play. And to this day, it ranks amongst some of the coolest things I've done. Not partly because of the size of the crowd and partly just because of the environment.
Right.
But that moment will always rank very, very high for me.
And that's why you shouldn't stop playing that kit. Keep that kit. Don't let anybody swap it out on you. You don't need a newer kit. That kit's got stories. That kit's got vibe. Chad Stewart, DW Drums, thank you, my friend. Thanks for being our guest on the Interstate of Music podcast. It's been fun getting to know you a little bit better, knowing you a little bit different, and hearing a little bit more about you and DW Drums. Thanks so much for being part of the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You bet, buddy.